You are tuned in to Hustle Cannabis with your host,
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Hustle Cannabis, where we talk all things marijuana related, including my own entrance into the industry. Today is a very special day. I'm going to be having my first live guest on the show. He goes by the name of Michael, and he is a bud tender out in Colorado. He's been in the industry for a while now. He seems to have a lot of experience, really, you know, fun, solid personality. And I'm just really excited to talk to him and kind of get his history being from Colorado. And we will essentially be going back and forth about why we got into the industry, what our aspirations are, what we want to do with this whole podcast and anchor thing, and all of that. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and call him in now, and we'll get this thing going. Michael, how's it going?
Chris, what's up, kid? How are you doing?
Doing well, man. Nice to finally get in touch with you, get on the call together.
Yeah, no, the pleasure's all mine. I've been looking forward to this, since I got on the Anchor app, and I just happen to, you know, I get on there, naturally I type in cannabis when they ask you to you search for whatever you're going to search for, and I came across your podcast. I think I got about 30 seconds into it, and I was like, all right, how do I reach out to this kid? Because we got a lot in common, I could tell already. Here's how I know. You're from the Northeast. You said you're from Jersey, correct?
Correct, yep.
You're a veteran. You were down in you were in the Army?
Exactly. And stationed, I heard you were in the Marines.
Stationed in the South. Yeah, I was in the Marine Corps, stationed in North Carolina. And then, yeah, from North Carolina, moved out here to Colorado, and you're in Washington or Oregon?
Oregon, Southern Oregon.
Right, Southern by Oregon. North County. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I remember that part. And so,
also,
yeah, crazy. I was – oh, go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, also, I heard that you lived in Wilmington for a bit.
Well, Wilmington, North Carolina, but I'm also from Wilmington, Massachusetts. So there's kind of an overlap in the name of towns, but for two different locations.
Okay, yeah. So my mother actually lives in Wilmington, North Carolina right now.
So oh, that's awesome.
I thought that was pretty funny. Another similarity.
Hey, crazy, man. This is a crazy thought. I might not actually be talking to you. If I hadn't moved to Colorado, if I was still living in Wilmington, there's a good chance I could have had a conversation with your moms one day, you know? Like, just about whatever.
That's too funny, man. Yeah. It's so funny how things work out. But yeah, so essentially, I wanted to get you on the podcast and kind of, you know, go over a couple things and see why you got in the industry, what your motivations are, what you want to do in the future, where you want to go with this whole anchor and podcast thing. And I've really been looking for someone to be like a consistent guest or even to like do a dual podcast with. So we'll see how this goes, man. Let's chat it up and let's kind of get to know each other a bit.
Yeah, definitely.
What made you want to get into the industry in the first place?
Well, when I was in college, I was paying attention to what was going on with legal marijuana in Colorado. And when things went legal in 2014, my focus was when I graduated from East Carolina, which was in Greenville, North Carolina. That's where I moved out here from. Okay. When I was done with ECU, I was going to move back to Wilmington. And like I said, my focus had shifted out west to these mountains, and I'm thinking if I can get out there, that's like a brand new industry to be in the right place at the right time. If things go legal federally, I'm thinking that, you know, if Colorado sets the standard, that's the place that they're going to start plucking people out of to find, you know, jobs for this and jobs for that. I make up hypotheticals that maybe one day a pharmaceutical company, and I know people cringe when they hear that, but pharmaceutical company, Pfizer, PPD, whoever it might be,
right,
that they decide to get into the CBD game, and they're not growing. Everybody knows they're probably not growing weed right now. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking that there has to be some sort of an owner out here that's just waiting for Winston-Salem, because they already got the cigarette rolling machines, to get into the marijuana game and just stroke that guy a check. And the next thing you know, his staff is on board with them. That's where I wanted to be, maybe in a consultant role, you know, and that was the hypothetical. In the real world, Massachusetts, that's my home state, but Massachusetts, they go and do the legal rec thing. And, you know, if you get on Craigslist every now and then, you can see advertisements for people from California, Oregon, and Washington in Colorado, Denver Craigslist, where you go to the jobs and search for marijuana, you see them saying like, hey, come to this state, you know, and we're looking for, you know, a retail manager that has experience using Metric.
Right,
I have
Metric.
To imagine Massachusetts is going to go on board with the same thing. That's just the natural progression of how this seems to be playing out.
You know what's so funny about that is New Jersey's new governor is about to legalize as well.
That's right.
So we're kind of in the same boat. Where I'm working at now, Emerald Triangle Dispensary, and they also have Emerald Fields, which is an indoor tier 2 grow attached to the company. And they're looking to possibly franchise out to other states, and I might be heading that, you know, journey out to New Jersey. So it's funny, you know, we might both kind of be going to our home states and, you know, bringing this whole cannabis thing there, and that'd be funny if it came full circle.
Oh, that'd be stupendous, man, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know if I can leave Colorado, dude. It's so fucking beautiful out here.
I know, same in Oregon.
Oh, yeah, I know. See, Oregon's got the ocean. Colorado, it's landlocked. And I got to be honest with you, dude. This one thing that I do miss, and this is more or less from actually living in the beach in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I miss the sound of seagulls. There's no seagulls in Colorado. And the ones that I do see, they're these tiny little skinny birds. They can't even caw right. You got to hold a friend. You come out of McDonald's or Burger King, they don't know what to do with the French fries. They smell
like,
it, but they don't
the
come
French
down
fries.
And eat it. Yeah, they don't give a shit about the French fries. You know, they look like they just escaped ISIS and like it's stuck. The wind blew them inward or something.
Jesus.
You know? So, yeah, so I missed this. I don't know where I was going with that. I missed the sound of seagulls, but I can't leave Colorado, man. This place is just, it's like living in a Bob Ross painting.
I know. It's beautiful, man. That was my original goal, was to move to Colorado, and I actually got with my girl, and she's from Oregon, and it kind of worked out to where we had some connections set up. Her family is here in Oregon. You know, we planned on moving to Colorado to get into the cannabis industry, but we already had, like I said, some networking out here, so we decided to go to Oregon instead. But, yeah, that was my original goal, was to go out there because it's so beautiful. The industry, you know, is they were the first to kind of go rec. They have so much experience. So you definitely made the right move going out there.
Well, I hope I made the right move. I mean, only time will tell. I don't really necessarily think it's going to turn into anything bad. You know, it's got to be the right move. You're in Oregon. You're in the right place. People listening to this, if you're in Washington State, you're in the right place. And the people that are in states where it's med only, trust me, you're definitely in the right place. Pay attention and look at what happened to Vegas, man. There's a dispensary down here in Colorado called The Clinic. And The Clinic basically just set up a shop out in Las Vegas, out there in Nevada, just rolling the dice, no pun intended, that Nevada would end up having rec. And sure as shit, they passed it. And now that's one of the first Colorado companies to be in another state. And that's stupendous right there, man. That's awesome.
Huge.
Yeah. You guys, hey, listen, you guys got a Colorado dispensary up your way, Sweetleaf. You heard about what happened down here in Colorado with Sweetleaf?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. The name definitely rings a bell.
Ah, well, yeah. The long and the short of this is, and we can get into this later, but, they just had the dispensary got shut down for violating codes involving compliance with the state and whatnot. I just didn't know if it had made news up there as well.
And so what were they doing? Were they selling more than a limited amount, or was it more of a, they weren't bagging it with like child safety bags or
whatever? No, you were right the first time. It was more than a limited amount. So you can't, so in Colorado on the recreational side, 21 ounces, Jesus Christ, 1 ounce. I was going to say it's going to be 21 years old. You're going to be 21 years old, valid state ID, but 1 ounce is what your carry weight is. So you can walk around with the 28 grams. On the medical side, 2 ounces. But what I was going to say is that the dispensary can't sell you more than 1 ounce per day. Some people believe it's 1 ounce per transaction, and that is a gray area. If that might be true. I don't really know the law to the T, but I do know that Sweetleaf or a few employees of that had gone up over the carry weight where they sold 9 ounces to an undercover cop. So,
ooh,
no bueno.
That'll do it.
That'll get you. Yeah. Now, there was a lot more going on for the rumor mill. The rumor mill has been pumping out that, you know, there was some tax evasion. I don't know how true that is, that there was a year-long investigation. I don't know how true that is. And that this was, you know, kind of like the tail end of it, so to speak. That it wasn't just the guy happened to stumble in there and, you know, and lock out. But,
Damn, man.
Yeah. I said, I was just curious to see if that had made its way up to where you guys were at.
Yeah, no, we haven't heard too much news about that particular case.
But there's been a lot of that going on. We just had a guy from Portland that was transporting a bunch of concentrate up towards I believe it was Alaska. It was another legal state, but he was transferring it or transporting it through an illegal state and got popped. And he's done for. These two guys that were in the car, man, they had like 500 grams of shatter and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
They're not playing around, man. Like they're really adamant about these laws.
Well, if everybody goes legal, then there's nothing to worry about. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm preaching to the choir, so to speak. But whatever state they got caught in that didn't have it, that's really the problem if you break it down, because those guys wouldn't have needed to travel from wherever they were at to begin with to go down and get the shatter and bring it back, and they get caught in between, you know?
Right, 100%. So if you had – I have a question. If you had to guess, how long do you think it would take until we're completely federally legal – to where it's a no big deal, every state's on the same page. How many, like, what do you think, 5, 10, 15 years?
Well, it's going to be in a matter of terms of presidencies, I think. I would say, obviously, it's not going to happen between now and in 2020. I mean, I'm not a political guy. I'll just throw this right out there to begin with, that I don't even have any fucking clue what I'm talking about when it comes to politics. I talk out of my ass. I would, but, I mean, anybody can read the writing on the wall. It's not like Trump is Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie would have turned it over immediately. Hillary, maybe it would have been a little bit slower. Trump, not necessarily. The good thing about it is that I don't see Donald Trump turning away the money. He might just leave it up to the states to ratify their own constitutions individually. We keep our fingers crossed that Jeff Sessions, you know, he doesn't actually breathe a whole bunch of life back into the war on drugs, and that you and I are out of jobs. But I don't know. I wouldn't say it's going to happen before 2020. If Trump doesn't get reelected, then maybe 2024, sometime in that chunk, if a new president, if the Democrats somehow, you know, they get a guy in there and he's all right with it. Yeah. I don't know, man.
I
just don't think it's going to be the next 2 years.
Right. I think it's definitely going to be, you know, about 5 years minimum until we can get like something pushed to Congress for federal legalization. But I mean, that's going to be huge, man. I think within the next 20 years, this is going to be one of the most, you know, traded international crops out there. Like, it's going to be a huge cash crop. And there, I know that Canada is already exporting cannabis to, I believe it's Croatia. So there's already international trade going between other countries, which is crazy. So I can't even imagine within the next 15 to 20 years how big this industry is going to get.
North Korea, kid. North Korea doesn't even consider cannabis or opiates to be to be drugs. Like, they consider
that.
No, dude, I'm not even being funny with you. They really honestly consider cannabis, it's not even a narcotic. And I believe opiates are the same thing. Yeah, they got
over there getting lit.
But imagine this weed can't be. How crazy would it be if they were just high all the time and we fucking just got that completely wrong? And that's why North Korea, like, they just fucking light years ahead of us because they're over smoking on the harshest blue dream ever.
Yeah, that's
you know?
All they're
no,
doing.
But real honestly, yeah, that's you might want to Google fact check me on that one, but I'm pretty sure that's a thing that North Korea doesn't consider, you know, like I said, cannabis and opiates or something, a fucking narcotic.
That is too funny, man. Yeah. I can imagine they have like the craziest indoor grows over there. Like, that's all they're doing. It's a big cover up.
Yeah, it's just
they're
a just giant
experimenting,
fucking
making the best cannabis they could possibly push out.
They figured it out, and they figured if they put this fucking half retarded guy up front, then that's all we'll focus on, and we'll leave him alone. You know what I mean? They're flying the satellites overhead, and all you ever see is pictures of North Korea. All you see is like just the capital is the only thing that's lit up. Everything else around it, it's just a grow house. You know, they just got grow houses galore.
Pounds,
yeah,
pounds, and they're exporting them. They're getting ready for it to go international, and they're going to be the new superpower.
Somewhere in a perfect universe that just took place.
Yeah, man.
Tell me about you. How long have you been out in Oregon now? You've only been out there for like a short amount of time, a couple of months.
Been out
or
here
something?
For about 6 months.
Six months
so far.
Yeah.
But I was in, you know, the quote unquote cannabis industry for a long time when I was younger, before I joined, on the quote unquote black market side of things. So I've been, you know, passionate about it since I was very young. 14, you know, 15. I was very passionate about the whole thing. Just never thought that it was gonna be legalized and be a legitimate career at this point in my life. I thought I was gonna be way older.
I never thought I'd sell weed and file taxes at the same time. Let me tell you, that's a mind blowing experience.
walk into the fucking H&R Block with your W-2s knowing that it's because you moved a couple pounds over the last 365. You know what I mean? Like, that's a people ask me that. They come into the dispensary, and I get all types of questions. But one of the questions I get is, you know, what's the best part of your job? And the people take pot shots. Is it the discount? Is it, whatever. But I always stun them when I'm like, no, man, it's filing taxes. Because there's people down the street from where I'm at. The location of the dispensary that I'm in, I work for a company called Native Roots, and it's in Littleton, Colorado. Native Roots is the biggest game. It's one of the biggest games. We have 21 dispensaries and more.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of you guys.
Yeah, and we have 21 dispensaries and more licenses than anyone else in the marijuana game, more than the concentrate companies, any other dispensary, edible companies. So we're a big game. The dispensary that I'm at in Littleton is the flagship store. It's a high-volume store. So like I said, I get all types of questions, and it blows people's minds when I tell them that filing taxes – is the best part, because around the corner and down the block is a federal penitentiary. And I have to imagine that there's people in there doing fucking life sentences for the shit I'm getting a 401k for. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's unbelievable how fast things can change. Like, it's crazy. 10 years ago, you'd be in prison. You know?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Especially for us coming from the East Coast. Like, I remember just driving around with a dime bag, 0.5 grand in my pocket when I was a kid, scared to death of narcs, scared to death of the fucking black cars coming up. Like, it's just insane how fast things can change. I thought it was going to be at least another 20, 25 years before this was even close to possible.
Yeah, I didn't really have a time frame. I just kind of caught my eye. All of a sudden, things were going legal on the rec side in Colorado when they had voted it in. And, I know California was always trying to do it. In Massachusetts, they always had some stone a weekend. You can go down to fucking Boston Commons and fucking smoke weed on the bus and on the train, and nobody will really harass you. And in California, like I said, they had a medical program. I always thought it was just for glaucoma. And then you pay attention to
stuff.
Yeah. And people start saying, oh, this is my medicine. And I'm like, okay, as time's going on, I'm thinking this is just a bunch of hippies that found a fucking loophole. And they're going to start saying they use it for religious purposes. And then that'll be the end of it. It won't ever happen.
Right.
Next thing you know, Colorado wakes up and they're like, hey, man, come January 1st, 2014, you can walk out of this store with an ounce, and no one's going to fucking touch you because it's state constitutionally legal. And that shit was awesome.
Yeah, man. I was still in the military at that point, and I started hearing all this shit. I'm like, wow. Like, I really have a whole game plan now for when I get out. So I just started preparing, right at that point. I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Started figuring everything out. So when did you make the jump? You said right after college, or was it a little bit after you finished college?
No. It was almost immediately after. I had already mentally pulled the trigger in my mind that I was moving out here. I graduated from ECU on May 8th of 2015, and I was standing in my apartment here in Lodo, in Denver, rather, and on June 1st.
What's your degree in?
I got a degree – well, a couple of them. I had a couple of community colleges I'd gone to and graduated from, and then I went on and transferred that into – to ECU, and from ECU I graduated with a degree in criminal justice.
Okay, cool. Yeah, cool. Yeah. What made you want to take that route, the criminal justice route?
The veteran thing, man. It's how many veterans do you know get out and then next thing you know they're trying to get a degree in fucking physics? It's usually like some sort of criminal justice degree.
So true.
Yeah, I mean, there were more veterans in the criminal justice program that I could shake a stick at.
Okay.
Yeah.
That probably helped you with like compliance and all that shit.
Believe it or not, I actually tried getting an internship when I was at ECU out here in Denver with the Marijuana Enforcement Division, and they didn't even have an internship program.
Wow.
But
that
my school
been sick to see that.
Oh, that would have been amazing. And my school was they were cool with it. I asked one of my professors, I was like, look, here's the deal. And I was thinking he's going to be like, you're out of your fucking mind. What are you asking me that? But no, he was like, yeah, no, if they say do it, go ahead.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, and then I called the state, and the guy was just like, nah, man, that's a good question. No one's ever really asked us. We don't have an internship program. I was like, all right, well, it is only a year old.
Yeah, so you were on top of it, man. Were you always really passionate about weed?
Not in the stoner sense. I mean, I smoke weed with friends growing up. I was
Not like hippy dippy, but like,
no, yeah.
Did you think that it had a lot of potential, like a safer alternative to alcohol kind of thing?
Oh, without a matter of, yeah, easily. It was definitely a safer alternative to alcohol. I mean, everybody can see that. Nobody smokes weed and kicks the dog.
Right.
People got no problem getting licked up and knocking the wife's teeth out, Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. That was my big thing, is because I come from a family where, there was quite a bit of alcoholism and stuff, and I've seen. I mean, I drink. I like to drink, but I just think that it definitely is a safer way to recreate. And most people want to recreate with some kind of substance. It's just like an inherent desire for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I just think it's a safer alternative, man, and it should be out there.
Everybody wants to be high and happy, man, no matter whether you're trying to do heroin or fucking smoke weed or MDMA. I mean, it's all about trying to just feel better and be happy and, you know, kind of forget about the stresses of life.
Exactly.
Marijuana
I
was going to say that marijuana also happens to have medicinal purposes, so there's a benefit to it on that side as well.
Exactly. It's the perfect happy medium, man. It's like not to get all hippy-dippy spiritual, but it's like God's gift. Like, it's crazy how, you know, how many benefits it has.
Yeah. All right, Bob Marley, actually, I think, was quoted as saying that making marijuana legal is like slapping God in the face. I'm like, well, it's
you pretty said it true. Like, you're slapping what you said?
He said making marijuana illegal is like slapping God in the face.
Who said that?
I think Bob Marley said that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's true, man.
Yeah.
I fucking love Bob Marley. But, yeah, so what are your aspirations in the industry and your aspirations as far as this whole podcast game go?
That's a great question, man. Aspirations in the industry, I would love to be in a compliance position and then work for the compliance department of marijuana and then from there get into consulting. I think that the compliance aspect in the marijuana industry is a niche market that's going to translate it's going to translate to each state, you know, so Massachusetts is going to model what Colorado does. And how are they going to find out what's going on? They're obviously going to come over to ask Colorado. I mean, you know, in a nutshell, ask Colorado what's going on. They're going to ask the lawyers. They're going to talk to the state. They're going to talk to the big games and those compliance departments. And that's what I wanted to get into was compliance. That way I could get into some sort of consulting role. But right now I'm just a receptionist.
That's a smart move. I actually haven't even thought about that side of thing. I haven't thought about like that you could really have a government job in the future doing this. You know, I mean, consulting as well, but you could really, you know, be like a regulator and have.
Yeah, but if you're having a government job, I mean, the people who work for the Marijuana Enforcement Division in Colorado can't smoke weed.
Oh, yeah.
I straight up asked him that when I went in to go renew my badge. I had to renew my employment badge every 2 years, and I went in and I just, do you guys smoke? I'm like, why not? You know, the DEA, the ATF, those guys, they drink alcohol and smoke cigarettes. I don't understand. You know, it made no sense. And the girl goes, no, you know, we have to have an unbiased opinion, yada, yada. I guess what they were trying to avoid is manipulation of favorites. Or maybe you had bad customer service at this place, and because you have a strong government influence, you could completely, you know, adjust how a company runs with, you know, maybe sending in inspections all the time or something, harassing
them. Some sketchy shit.
Yeah, so maybe they wanted an unbiased opinion. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
so you want to actually be like maybe like have your own consulting business where people that are just getting like states that are just legalizing cannabis can come to you and be like, hey, how do I set up a dispensary? How do I set up a grow?
My own consultant business would be nice. I mean, don't get me wrong. That would be nice. I'd like to just be part of a consultant team. I really don't want to leave Native Roots. I'm 36 years old, Marine Corps, college. I don't want to say been there, done that, but I'm not looking for a job. I'm looking for a career.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. And I really believe that I can truly find a career within Native Roots. This company is absolutely amazing. We have amazing employee parties. They just take care of us well. It's, like I said, it's nice knowing that I can sell weed. I got direct deposit. You can do a 401k, vision, dental. It's good. This is a great company to work for. I want a career with this because this is a career path worthy industry.
100%, man. That's fantastic because I actually just got into this new position here at Emerald Triangle Dispensary, and they're already getting licensing down in Arizona. They have a couple licenses in California now. They're trying to branch out into other places in Oregon. And like I said, he kind of wants to franchise out to New Jersey, and I'm hoping to lead that, you know, expedition into Jersey whenever they get those laws passed. But are you looking for maybe something like that? Like, would you want to branch out, maybe have your own dispensary with Native Roots down the road?
Well, you really don't own your own dispensary. You just be the general manager of it. The okay. You know, we got one guy who sits on top of the pyramid.
Oh, so it's not like a franchise?
They don't franchise. I don't know if there's some sort of regulation involved with franchising and if maybe there's corporate rules or corporate laws that they're weary of violating. You know, you have to understand that a lot of places don't even work with banks still. The little small mom and pop shops that are out here in Colorado, I worked for a place that was cash in an envelope, man.
Yeah, so, it's still like that out here in Oregon.
Yeah, so I would have to imagine that there's probably some sort of structure in place that prohibits franchising. I don't know. I haven't gotten into it, you know, to that degree. But even still, even if that were the case, I wouldn't even want to own a dispensary. To be honest with you, like I said, I think I'd be want to be more of a consultant team. I could see myself doing that. Hey, maybe if the state decides that they'll let their employees smoke, I could work for them work for the Marijuana Enforcement Division as an inspector or an investigator. That'd be fun. Yeah, that'd be fun. But
so how about this little side hustle you got going on, the podcast? Do you have any other social media up and going right now?
Just Facebook and Twitter, man. And I don't really use Twitter that much. Just a Facebook kid. I got the podcast. I heard about it from another podcast. And in the backstory was that I had a year ago for Christmas, I had gotten podcast equipment for my mother. And I had it downloaded onto a Mac, but then the Mac got pregnant and the battery had swollen up. So I had to bring it to Best Buy and they scrubbed it. So got some more podcast equipment and it was extremely complicated. The software was way over my head. So I put the whole concept on side, and then, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I'd heard about Anchor and just downloaded the app. Now here I am talking to you.
Hey, man, I think I heard you say something about Joey Diaz's podcast.
Yeah, Joey Diaz's podcast. Him and Bert Kreischer, they'd mentioned it.
Bro.
But Bert Kreischer had mentioned it, I think it was in see, I didn't want to elaborate on it because I can't remember. I want to say he mentioned it in the beginning in, like, his sponsorship. I don't know if Anchor's a sponsor for him, but maybe he had mentioned it then. And I want to say that Joey Diaz had mentioned it when he – at the beginning – same thing. I don't even remember. I just remember hearing about it and was like, oh, there's a podcast app. Nice.
Dude, I am a diehard, you know, Joe Rogan, Joey Diaz, Bert, all them fan. Like, I listen to all their podcasts. They are the shit. I watch Joey Diaz at least like 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, no, same thing with me, man. I got a little notification thing on my phone when they show up on YouTube. And then there's an app called Laughable. I don't know if you heard about that.
I have. But,
you can I get them all off of Laughable.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. Have you ever heard of Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V?
No, I haven't.
So he's like an entrepreneurial, he's a business owner, and he kind of gives like a lot of marketing advice and stuff like that. And he has a huge social media following. He's a CEO of a $200 million company, and he's real big in the podcast game. And he's the one who put me onto it about a year ago. I think he might be a little bit of an investor in it. But honestly, I didn't know that Joey Diaz was talking about it too. That's hilarious.
Yeah, he just mentioned it. I'll have to go back and find it. I don't know. I heard it from that. It just kind of like immediately downloaded the app and was like, okay, good. I can get back into what I wanted to do. There's a few things about it that I'm not happy with. I don't like that if I wanted to do this interview with you face to face, sitting in the same room, we can only do it in 5-minute chunks and you have to hold the button down. My girlfriend and I earlier were trying to find a way to have two people in the same room with one phone and then having the other phone that you called into in another room and on silent. So that way it didn't pick up any background noise. But we were only allowed to contact an individual that has not downloaded the app one time. Then once they download the app, they have to create their own station for you to contact them again.
Right. So I could definitely help you with that. Are you aware that you can upload audio on your PC or laptop?
What, from the app? I figured you could do that if you got onto the company's website.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. So you can record your own audio on whether it's like Audacity. I don't know if you're familiar with Audacity.
No, I'm not.
Or any of these other audio recording programs. And you can record it, you know, however long you want it to be, you know, 30 minutes, an hour. And then you actually log on to your account on a computer, and you can upload the entire recording and it segments it for you. And so you could have two microphones set up, plugged into your computer, you know, do like a traditional style podcast, and then just use the website instead of your phone, and it'll chunk it up into 5-minute segments for you.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So it's
all right. Yeah. That's cool. I figured you could, like I said, you could get into the, anchor.fm.
Yes.
Off of my Mac. And then from there, I could probably get into it. But I honestly hadn't even thought about doing the podcast from that. I have one of those. I got this beautiful microphone, man. It's awesome. It's this Yeti microphone, the Blue. It's a Yeti podcast equipment. It came with a microphone from the company Blue.
Wait, is it white? Is it like a white ball?
No. This is like an old school. This looks like the microphone that would come down out of the ceiling when they have the boxing matches.
Oh,
you know what I mean? The guy grabs it and he's like, "And the Blue corner weighing in at 250 stone." You know,
nice,
whatever the
man.
Fucking
so you got some high quality shit.
No, not. Well, I mean, yeah, it's high quality, but I mean, it's not. I don't know. This it came with like a podcast kit, and the podcast kit got burnt up on the computer, and I just kept the microphone.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
Still got
so.
The mic.
Yeah, that's what we're gonna be doing when I have my coworkers. Like I said, I'm the whole one bird, two stone powwow is gonna be just me sitting down with coworkers, friends, people in the industry, conversations just like this. We'll just pass a bowl or a joint, whatever. I want to know your story. I want to know where you came from. It's just like exactly what this conversation is, but under my wing. You know what I mean?
Right. 100%.
And yeah, and this was the intent from, you know, a little bit more than a year ago. So
that's so funny, man. We have like the same exact idea. We can definitely, you know, work together and make some shit.
Well, good. I'm glad we could do some sort of collaboration. Look at, man, you're gonna have to. You're way better at this than I am. I heard you were complaining that you lost 30,000 Instagram followers. I'm like, fuck. I got like 273 Facebook friends, and half of them I don't even like anymore. You know, this guy's over here. He got fucking 30,000. I don't know what the fuck I would do with 30,000 people.
Hey man, I could definitely help you out and build up your Instagram and all kinds of social media. Because one thing I do for Emerald Triangle, the place where I'm working right now, is I run all of their media and their social media as well, but like all their photography and things like that. So I guess I'm pretty equipped to, you know, help you grow that if you want.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely love to grow this, have this platform. You know, the Anchor thing. Obviously, I have to shoot them on that, but Facebook or Instagram or whatever. I'm not big into social media. To that regard, I kind of stay low key, and I'm like a Facebook. I get on Pinterest. That's it, man. I was just gonna put this thing on Facebook and let, I don't know, my friends share it. If they didn't share it, then fuck it. It is what it is.
Hey, man, I would say right now your best bet is to get on Instagram ASAP and get into the cannabis niche. Being that you're a bud tender, do you get like free samples and all kinds of stuff like that? And I mean, obviously, you're around bud all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, if you get on Instagram and you just start snapping some pretty cool, like, photos, bro, you can blow up real quick. There's a huge demand for that right now on Instagram. So, like, I created my niche brand, I guess you could say, Hustle Cannabis, about a year ago.
Okay.
I just got my account back. I don't know if you heard, but I got my account back. I appealed it. And so I'm almost at 30,000 followers, and that's under a year, like 10, 11 months. That's how big the demand is for, like, cannabis content right now.
What did you get banned for? Why would they have banned your account for putting pictures of weed up?
Yeah, so literally it just comes down to competition or people that are, you know, say your photo pops up in their feed and they're, like, super conservative and they don't like it and they report it. It just comes down to that. And it happens to a lot of accounts, you know, when they get a little bigger, they'll end up getting banned. But most of the time, if you're consistent and you keep appealing – they'll contact you and reinstate you. And then after that, you kind of almost have like a shield up, like to where, you know, it's harder for you to get banned again. So I have a direct line with Facebook and Instagram now. And they're like, "I'm sorry for the inconvenience. If it ever happens again, feel free to hit us up, et cetera, et cetera." So it's a pretty common thing for people to get taken down. You just got to be careful. You can't post prices. That's a big one. You can't like act like you're selling weed. It's just got to be pure pictures.
All right. I got you.
Yeah, man.
Well, that sucks that you got fucking taken down because somebody didn't like your pictures. What are they on? I mean, this is rhetorical, but what are they on your shit for to begin with? Do they feel justified, like they won the day?
Yeah, man, it's just haters. It really comes down to haters. Yeah. Either people are jealous or they don't like, you know, cannabis or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, certain religious beliefs. It's just they're like, "Oh, I want to report this. This is not good." Da, da, da. And, you know, Instagram understands that, but they have like an automatic algorithm that if you get reported for a certain number of times or whatever, that you just get automatically.
Yeah, it shuts you off.
I've had friends with like 130,000 followers get shot, 150,000 followers get shut down. So, I mean, it could happen, but there is a way to get it back if you're just consistent with the appeal process, which is nice.
That's so interesting that people would just take time out of their day to do that, as if they got nothing fucking better to do with their lives.
Yeah, man.
It's funny that the one thing that they're trying to fucking shut down, pictures of White 99 you know, and Chiba Chews or whatever the hell is going on in your Instagram. Right. That's actually what would make them not want to take the photos down.
Exactly. Like, if you, just chilled the fuck out, you know, smoked a joint and sat back, you'd be like, what am I doing with my time? I'm literally taking 100% time out of my day, you know, not being productive, trying to, you know, hurt somebody else's game and hate on somebody. Like, what are you doing, bro? I mean, that's just loser mentality.
Well, I'm sorry that it affected you like that. You know, obviously it's a good thing now that the two Instagram and whoever else you got shut off with are on your side.
Yeah, I'm so happy, man. I was just like blown away that they ended up helping me out and getting it put back up, because I put so much time into that. That was my first platform that I really went hard on, because I was heading out to an illegal state, or not, sorry, from an illegal state to a legal state with no background in the cannabis industry, and I needed some kind of leverage. So I ended up just kind of like reposting photos in the beginning, like photos of cannabis that I found, you know, were high quality, and like, and I started networking with people in the industry on Instagram. That's actually how I started getting my positions. So that was the whole idea.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So you took the Instagram route to get into the marijuana game, and I just cracked open Craigslist.
Yeah, yeah. Two different approaches, but same kind of thing. Just networking, man. Just straight net.
Yeah, mine was networking. I called it the shotgun effect. I moved out here, and I lucked out that the apartment complex that I'm living in is absolutely brand new. I'm the first person to live in the apartment that I'm living in now. So they had like a concession to get people to live in the building, and they gave you 1 month free rent.
Oh, wow.
And it was honestly, dude, I told myself I didn't want to pay more than, you know, X number of dollars. I didn't want to pay more than 15 a month. And this place, including like the parking spot and the dog, was $15.59 or something like that. I said, that's fucking perfect. $15.60, I'll take it.
Wow.
So I had 1 month free rent, a little bit of money saved up, and no job. And I spent the entire month. Yeah, I had I'd already gotten my employment badge from the state. I had a picture of that. I had a cover letter and a resume. And I would just all day, not really all day, but for a couple hours a day. Most of the time I was smoking weed. Let's be real. All right, man. Let's not fucking bullshit around. It wasn't all day. Okay. But anyway, you get it. I would send out cover letter, resume, badge, boom. And I had a whole like generic email typed up. So it was just a matter of cut, copy, and paste. And I just had faith that there's got to be a job out there somewhere. I just need to get my foot in the door so the next resume I send out has experience in the industry.
Man, it sounds like you're a true hustler. Sure as shit.
Yeah, I don't know if it was more of a hustle. It was more of a patience game, to be honest with you, man. I played poker for a long time. It actually kind of helped pave my way through college. I made good money at it. Oh, shit.
That's interesting.
Hey, you there?
Yeah, no, you're good.
Yeah, wait, hold on a second, man. Sorry, I just dropped my phone.
Yeah, no problem.
Sorry about that.
You're good.
I have a little grip on the back, and it just came unglued.
Oh, I got you.
Sorry, people. Hold on. Give me 1 second here.
No worries, man.
All right. Yeah, all right. Shit, that was embarrassing. Anyway, so one of the things I learned from playing poker was just patience. I knew patience pays. Just sit back and be patient, man. And sure as fuck, I was just patient enough. I found a job, and then that job led to another job and led to another job, and it was really a matter of having experience on a resume. So the next resume I handed out, the next time I shotgunned the whole series of resumes out, it now had three jobs listed on it instead of just two, or instead of just one or none.
Dude, that's so smart. That's very similar to what I did too. But I love how you kind of just took that leap of faith and just moved out there and, you know, went for it without having any prior connections.
No, nothing. I didn't know a fucking soul in Colorado, man. I knew of people that had moved out to Colorado. There was one girl that she was friends of a friend of a guy that knew a dude that she blew in college or some shit. And she was out here married, living a life already. So she wasn't really a contact. A good friend of mine, one of my best friends, Austin, his girlfriend's sister was out here. And I came out and I didn't even know the girl. Like, the first time I ever laid eyes on her was when I knocked on her door. You know, she knew I was coming over and whatnot. We'd swap numbers. But I didn't know anyone in Colorado. And I'm comfortable like that, though. You know, I'm kind of an independent dude. Joined the Marine Corps at 19. Yeah. Yeah, get out of the Marine Corps. Stayed in North Carolina, Carolina to here. You know, I cut the umbilical cord a long time ago and have been fucking floating around in space ever since.
Yeah, I love that, man. I have a very similar attitude about life. Just been everywhere. I was stationed in Germany for a couple of years, in Tennessee. And just once you get over the fear of, like, you know, moving and, like, not knowing anybody, it really opens a lot of doors.
It's once you get over fucking holidays, once you miss your first Christmas, your first Easter, your first Thanksgiving, once you fucking, you know, your mother's birthday.
Exactly.
Or something, you know what I mean? Once you fucking, all of that goes by, it's irrelevant. The first time you spend Thanksgiving with your girlfriend's family and you never spent Thanksgiving with anyone's family before, it doesn't matter what the next year brings because it's not, you've already done something outside of your comfort zone.
Exactly, man. That's why I always say, like, one of my best decisions was joining the military.
You know? 100%. Oh, 100%. I want to speak for everybody, but everybody says that, man. That's exactly true. The best decision I made was joining the military. It straightens you out. It gives you focus. It sounds so cliche, but it does. It gives you discipline. Yeah, it gives you focus.
Exactly. Motivation, discipline. You know? And most of all, like you said, it takes you out of your comfort zone.
What was your MOS? What'd you do?
I was a medic. It's called 68 Whiskey. Yeah, I was a combat medic.
All right. I was in field artillery.
Nice.
I shot big 98-pound bullets at people from 30 miles out.
There you go. Yeah, I had a bunch of friends in artillery.
Well, 18 miles if you want to get specific, but yeah.
I used to hang a couple mortars. That's about the most that I did as far as artillery with mortars, goes. Yeah, I was hanging some mortars.
I got out of the Marine Corps in 2004. I joined a week after my 18th birthday in March 26th of 2000. I turned 19 the week before that in the 19th, and then, I joined the Marine Corps. Dude, I joined pre-9/11. Gas was like a dollar fucking 32, and people were pissed off about that. You know, Saddam Hussein was a fart in the wind from the fucking 90s, and not a soul had ever heard of Osama bin Laden before once in their fucking lives, right,
dude. That's crazy.
You know, unless you were paying attention to, like, what had gone on with the USS Cole and the embalmings in there was Tanzania and Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. But if you hadn't paid attention to the U.S. embassies getting blown up, you don't know who Osama bin Laden is. The guy... He looks like a fucking genie. It came out of the bottle. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know who. Yeah.
Magic carpet.
Lo and behold, I was actually overseas. I was on a deployment on 9/11. I was on the USS Kearsarge. I was part of the 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit.
Get out. And we were overseas when the shit went down.
I was literally already. Hold on a second. Electronics just decided to turn themselves on for no reason.
No worries.
Hold on, man. My TV just. I must have sat on the remote. Hold on. Anyway, yeah, I was already overseas on 9/11 when that had happened. So
holy shit, what was that like?
It was crazy, man. I was on the USS Kearsarge. We were off the coast of Albania doing operations with the UN. It was crazy, dude. 9/11 went down. My father was an airline pilot for American Airlines, based out of Boston. And I had spoken to him on the phone it was like the day before I had spoken to him on the phone. So I knew he wasn't at work. He kind of gave me the rundown of his schedule for the week, just in general conversation. Mm-hmm. But then 9/11 happened, 9/11 happened, and they made an announcement over the 1MC that if anybody who had family members that worked in the towers, that they were supposed to report to the 06 level or the 04 level or whatever it was, and they would try and get you satellite calls off of the ship. Right after 9/11 happened, and I mean like minutes after it had gone down, they cut off all the communication on the ship, and it started cutting like what are known as gator squares, and it was just going in a grid, a square, not going anywhere. Wait, it was like waiting for the order to go fucking kill somebody, you know what I mean?
Right, right.
And so anyway, so I had gone up to my first sergeant and said, hey, you know, I don't have family that work in the towers. My father's an airline pilot for American. He's based out of Boston. I don't think I even finished the sentence, and he grabs me by the collar, drags me up the stairs. We go up to the bridge into the 06 level, and I'll never forget this till the day I die, dude. I'm not kidding you. They had me go into this little area. There's some other people that had already done this as well, but you go into this little area, and they closed a curtain, and you could see the light from the other side had gone from, like, white to – from blue to white. And then when they pulled the curtain back, all the cameras – or the monitors, rather, had, like, things pulled down in front of them. And the guy hands me a phone, and he goes, just tell her the number. And I was like, oh, shit, all right. So I tell the lady the number. And I think it rang once, and it actually cut in on my father, who was on the other line with the FAA. He was, you know, trying to figure out what the fuck was going on himself.
Holy
and they patched
shit.
Him. Yeah, they patched it straight through. So I got some sort of, like, cool government fucking cut into my dad's phone line story on 9/11 when I was overseas and told him my father was an airline pilot.
Dude, that's gnarly. You know what's crazy about that is, you know, I thought I had a pretty, you know, not badass, but pretty insane story. But my dad, being in New Jersey, we lived maybe 30 minutes from the city. My dad actually worked in the city at the time at this, like, big plumbing corporation and was in the city when the shit went down. And I was in school at the time, and they were like, if you have any family members, you know, that work in New York, et cetera, work across the bridge, come down to the office. And it's crazy because I have such a similar story about that. But I essentially just called him on a normal phone, not like a badass fucking military phone.
I got handed the fucking red bat phone, man. And the guy, I'll never forget it. I'm not kidding you. He answered. He goes, just tell her the number.
Damn.
And I gave her the area code and the number. And I don't remember it even ringing, to be honest with you. But I was talking to my dad, and he was just like, yeah, I was in the line with the FAA, and they fucking cut in. I don't know, just told me, like, he had a beep, and he answered it, I guess, or something. I don't know what exactly happened, but, yeah, that was my 9/11 story. I was overseas. I left to go over there in maybe fucking April, I think. So we were due back in the United States in October when 9/11 had happened. Deployments at the time were only 6 months. You just kind of go out. You go to fucking Italy. You go to Greece. Right. You go to Malta, you eat the food. Yeah, you get drunk. You're not supposed to. That was it, man. I was getting paid to go on a cruise in the Mediterranean on an aircraft carrier.
That's how it felt. It was just like fucking traveling.
Well, then Bin Laden decided he wanted to go do what he had to do. And the next thing I know, the whole world changed. The whole fucking world changed.
Man,
and it hasn't been the same ever since.
Shit, man. How many years did you have left after 9/11?
Two and a half, because I joined in March of 2000, and a year and a half later would be September of 2001. So 2.5 out of 4 years left. Man. I was a Lance Corporal. I was 20.
So you were 20. Deep, yeah, I was in 20. It, man. So you were like ready to go full blown war mode.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we didn't know what the hell we were doing back then, man. It's not like, you know, fuck. We had like patchy green camo and leather boots.
Yeah.
This wasn't really like,
no up armor. You know, we didn't, I heard they about didn't this have, you guys had like no,
they didn't have rhinos and stuff. We didn't have any of that. Nobody ever heard of a fucking IED.
Yeah.
That was the whole different fucking war back. You know, nobody knew what that shit was. I'll tell you something, which was pretty cool. I thought the unit that replaced us, the 26th Mew, those were the first Marines, at least it's my understanding, but those were the first Marines to hit Afghanistan. I believe they took the airport in Kandahar. They were doing it with like regular M16s from fucking Vietnam and, you know what I mean? Like, tow missiles that didn't really even have fucking string on them and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Fucking happened like not even ACOG, iron sights.
Yeah, no. Nobody knew what an ACOG was. Like, yeah, dude, I don't even know if.
No up armor.
I don't even know if Recon had that back then.
No type of armor on the fucking vehicles.
Nothing. Nothing. Just we went there with fucking slingshots.
Yeah,
back in my Marine Corps, back when the fucking ships were made of wood and the men were made of steel. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, but no, that was a whole fucking another life ago, man. That was 14 years and 40 pounds ago. Like, when the hell did I get out? It's 2000. Yeah, I'm going to call it 14 years. I got out 2004, and then I missed it. I had I don't know what the fuck I bumped my head on, but I decided I wanted to go back in again. So in 2007, I went back into a reserve unit, and I was in a tank unit for 6 months, and then I got out.
You're like, fuck this.
Well, it wasn't really that. What had happened was is, so my cutting score had stayed active after I had gotten out of the Marine Corps.
Oh, so your cutting score, like, is that like an ASVAB type score?
I don't know what you guys call it in the Army, but in the Marine Corps, you can get promoted based upon a score.
Oh yeah, same
and your
shit.
Score.
Yeah, we have that.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. What you shoot in the rifle? Well, when I had gone into is what you shot in the rifle range, what you got in a PFT.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do these courses called MCTs, the Marine Corps, something, I forget what the fuck it is. Marine Corps T, MCT, whatever it was.
Right.
No. I take that back. I can't think of what those books
were
called.
It's like mandatory training that gives you credits and points and shit.
Something, yeah. I forget what they were called. But anyway, yeah, so you do a bunch of those, and then you get a score, and then when it, you know, every quarter comes around or whenever you're up for promotion, if you have your score and the score matches what the score requirement is, then you can get in. So anyway, your score stays active, and I had gotten out of the Marine Corps. And I was still doing some of those little, like, on the side, I was taking some of those little tests and sending them back in. A buddy of mine had gotten promoted to sergeant. He just got bored one day and started taking the little tests and sending them in. And then fucking 6-7 months later, he gets a promotion warrant in the mail for sergeant. He goes, yeah. He goes, your cutting score stayed active. And they happen to – it just lowered out enough for wherever his score was at without even having to take a PFT or shoot in the rifle range. He got promoted to sergeant. So I started doing that, and I decided I wanted to go back into the reserve. But they wouldn't promote me to sergeant until I had graduated from tank school in Fort Knox. And I told them, look, I'm already going to college in East Carolina coming up here. I said, you know, I'm not going to stick around. I did 4 years active. I know I can get out. You can do 4 years active duty. And then in your 4 years of inactive,
if you voluntarily go in, you're considered what the Marine Corps calls as a non-ob. You're not obligated to continue that contract. Mm-hmm. You can leave whenever you want. So I was doing the tampon thing where I was doing 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year in a reserve unit. And when they told me they weren't going to promote me to sergeant until I had gone to Fort Knox and I had to go in September, I said, no, I'm going to college in September. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, with all due respect, I served my four. And my CO was the shit. The guy was from Massachusetts. He Mustanged. He used to be a corporal. I was a corporal as well. He used to be a corporal. And then he got out and he went to college and he came back in as an officer. So he kind of had respected my perspective on this, where I was like, look, I did my four. You know, here's the deal. He signed off on it. The first dirt, he didn't get it. The first sergeant. You know, he's a lifer, so they don't understand why you want to go be a civilian.
Oh, of course. They're like, what are you
doing? They don't get it.
Why are you leaving?
Yeah, they don't understand. Yeah, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So I hung my hat proud. I didn't care. You know, I just got a story to tell about how I trained with a tank unit for 6 months and fucking played in a video game every time we went there. It wasn't really much with the reserve unit.
Well, that's what's up, man. It's nice to get your background in the military. It's very rare that I've gotten a chance to speak with another veteran in the industry, you know, over the past year. So this is really cool, man.
Have you ever watched the show Disjointed?
I started watching it. I saw like half of the first episode and I was like tweaking off edibles. So I pretty much fell asleep.
Oh, man.
And I haven't gotten a
chance to watch
it. You
got to go back and watch it. You got to go back and watch it. It's so cliche. It's kind of overacted and it's funny, but it's not like piss your pants funny. You got to watch it high. With Kathy Bates is in it, and I forget the rest of the other characters, but names, the cast names, but they have a veteran and he's like the security guy that comes in and checks IDs and he's this disgruntled dude and he's pissed and he doesn't take marijuana. And then I think he ends up smoking and helping cure some PTSD, but you got to go watch it, dude. It's a pretty cliche show about individuals in the marijuana industry.
Oh, dude, I have to. I've been hearing great things about it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So what do you do exactly for your company? I know you've done social media, but where do you work? When you wake up in the morning, where do you drive to? Do you go to the grow house? Are you sitting behind the register? Like I said, I work reception and bud tending at my store, mainly reception right now. But what's your deal?
So as of right now, I'm working straight dispensary. I've been in the grow a couple times, but I think I'm going to be leaning more towards the growing side of things. Over the summer, I worked for a separate company, Primo Farms, which was like a 2,000 plant industrial grow. But now I'm kind of leaning more towards the dispensary side of things. And I'm honestly doing it just so that I can get all different aspects of the cannabis industry, you know, down and understood. And I want to document it and kind of put it out for the people to see, like, hey, this is what it's like to, you know, to be a grower. This is what it's like to work in a dispensary. This is what it's like to da-da-da, you know, like different positions. So I drive to the dispensary in the morning. And I'm literally just like a retail guy. I'm either, you know, rolling joints in the back, you know, using the joint rolling machine, attending the customers, you know, doing intakes, you know, getting different products, talking with vendors, that kind of stuff. Pretty much everything that goes into a dispensary. And at the same time, you know, have, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day where I'm taking pictures of all of our new products coming in, handling their social media. And that's pretty much it. That's where I'm sitting at right now. But I'm also back in school, too. I'm just off for winter break. I'm using my GI Bill as well.
Hey, you're using the GI Bill. Would you have, I'm imagining you would be on the post-9/11 GI Bill.
Post-9/11, yep.
Yeah, post-9/11. So here's the interesting thing about that. I was using the Montgomery GI Bill, the first one. And what you do is you pay for school, and then they reimburse you.
Yeah.
You had 48 months or $48,000, whichever one came first, I forget. I decided to switch from Montgomery to post 9/11, and I had no idea whatsoever that what they do is they give you money based upon how much time you served post 9/11, which was 2.5 years. So I qualified for a lesser amount of money. Then on top of that, they subtracted what I had used from the Montgomery GI Bill, and I get a letter in the mail telling me that they're only going to cover them one more semester, and this is like sophomore year.
What?
I almost threw up. So yeah, that's where poker came into play.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so I was going to say it's a good thing you have the post-9/11 GI Bill, because I know that it does what it's supposed to do. It just covers your bills and you're good.
Oh, dude, it's,
you know,
cake. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, that's good. What's your major? Where are you going to school and what's your major?
So I'm going for marketing, and I'm down here in Southern Oregon University. You know, I really do want to finish school. I went to Rutgers University in New Jersey for a year before I joined, because I joined at 19. But
yeah.
Yeah, I've always been kind of leaning towards business, And it kind of falls right in line with the cannabis industry and what I want to do. And part of me is like, I don't even know if I want to go back next semester. I just kind of want to go full force, you know, into the industry. But on the other hand, it's like, I can't give up that benefit. That benefit is so solid.
Yeah. Let me tell you, go stick it out. College. You think the military was the best decision you ever made? College is, it is a breeding ground of liberalism, and it'll change your perspective on life, man. It'll just refocus the lenses in which you view things. It's definitely worth it. I find myself every day using certain things I learned in the Marine Corps. Like every single day, something that the Marine Corps taught me shows up, and then it's always backed up by some sort of philosophical support that I learned in college, or some sort of aspect in criminal justice that I learned that helps you better understand this. Or just trust me, man, it's worth it. Stick it out. The only thing that sucks is the fucking bill after.
Yeah, that's such a good point, man. I really have to. And luckily,
oh yeah, you're not gonna have a bill because you have the GI Bill. Yeah, I forgot. I got a student loan. I had to take out student loans. That's right. You're gonna have the GI Bill.
Yeah, man. So I'd be an idiot to really not go back because they're paying me to go to school. So what I'm gonna do when this next semester starts up, I'm just gonna, you know, slow down with my hours at work and you know, still do all their media and stuff. Maybe not have too much time actually in the dispensary or the grow, and then just finish up this degree, man. Because I only have like a year and a half, maybe 2 years tops left. I'd be an idiot not to go back. Yeah.
And how big is the dispensary you work for? Do you guys have multiple locations? Is it just the one spot? And how many people do you guys see in a day? I don't need numbers in terms of how much money the registers make, but what's an average day? What's a high volume day in terms of people in and out of the door? And yeah, and like I said, how many places do you guys have?
We are 100% like the most advanced and biggest dispensary in Southern Oregon right now that I'm aware of. As of right now, we only have one location because the market is so fresh. We've only been open for 8 months because I think the first dispensary here opened, like actual recreational dispensary opened like 12 months ago. So we're still really new compared to Colorado.
Okay.
We're working on branching out to other locations. But, I mean, we're doing delivery. I believe we get on average about 350 people coming in a day. Like, it's a lot of traffic, especially – you know, around this time of year, we had, you know, it's just nonstop people coming in and out. Lines, like, we're right downtown. Like, we're right downtown in a college town. So, we have the best location. And I really shopped around for a while before, you know, finding a dispensary to work at because I wanted to work with the best, you know, company possible so that if they did want to franchise out or do some kind of, you know, open up another shop somewhere, I could have that opportunity, just like you said. Like, your dispensary sounds like a very, very solid business.
Oh, Native Roots is a fucking monster, dude. Let me tell you. Like I said, we have 21 locations, and I don't have any idea how many licenses we have. There's word on the street that it's, you know, potentially the biggest grow out there. I worked for another company. The first company I worked for was a company called LiveWell, and I believe LiveWell may have more actual locations in all of Colorado than Native Roots does, but not by much. If they have 25, they got four more than us, right?
Okay. When,
but that grow house is – I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. And what I mean by that is I've never seen anything like that. I've never actually seen raw marijuana growing. So I went from zero to light speed in terms of my marijuana experience. I'd never seen a live marijuana plant once, and I walked into a place that had a giant seal on the front and a plaque, and it said certified by the state of Colorado as the largest indoor compliant grow in the world.
Jesus, that's amazing, man.
And that was a company I used to work for. And Native Roots now, they claim, I haven't seen the grow. The nickname of it is called the Mothership. And I haven't seen the Mothership yet. I've been with Native Roots. February will be 2 years now, and I haven't made my way over there yet. I've been busy dealing with the dispensary. The dispensary I'm at is an extremely high volume store. We haven't quite seen 1,000 people a day yet, but we've come close, man. We've been in the fucking high 700s, 800s. Definitely been in the 900s around holiday times. So,
jeez.
Yeah, and I do reception, so. When you come through the front door, I don't know how it works in Oregon, but when you come through the front door in Colorado, they check your ID at the receptionist, and then they check it again at the register. And it may actually be the same person. You might see you at the front, take your ID, walk you through, and then at the register, do it again.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, at my dispensary,
You come in, you see me, I check your ID, and you may actually have to wait and have to sit down for 15 minutes. That's a bad day, 15 minutes.
Wow.
Or a high busy, a high volume day. But, yeah, there's we got about a dozen or so registers back there, and you're in and out, man. We can, you know, that place, I've seen that building literally do more than 60 people an hour. That's more than a person a minute.
You said a dozen registers?
Yeah, we have we do medical and recreational, and there are 10 rec registers and then 2 medical registers. And I kind of wish that there were more medical registers. A lot of people believe that the medical program out here is actually dying. I don't know why that would be the case.
That's how it isn't working too, yeah.
Yes, I don't understand what the deal is with that. I mean, it's better. It's cheaper weed. I don't know if you guys have a bifurcation if it's –
yeah, it's cheaper. You know,
medical is better than rec, or just cheaper in taxes. But out here, it's for the most part, it's the same. It's just the taxes. But it's cheaper. I don't understand why more people don't have a med card. But yeah, like I said, 12 registers and only 2 of them do med. I have there's 2 bud rooms. So.
Yeah, man, you guys are super high volume. But hey, man, my phone's about to die and my charging port is all jacked up, so I can't be on it while I'm charging. But yeah, we definitely have to do part 2 on this, man. This was phenomenal.
Oh, we're definitely going to pick up where this left off. I'm going to have you on my show. And for those that are listening, I need you guys to tune in next year. I'm going to do shows in 2018. I'm going to have friends and coworkers on. Like I said, the format's going to be the same. The one bird, two stone powwow. You tune in. You can chief with us. We'll talk about weed. You and I didn't even talk about weed. I don't even know what you like to smoke. And we'll have to get into that in part 2,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
So for those listening, you're going to have to tune in for the next segment and find out what we like.
Yeah, everybody,
find
please
out what
go
we
check
like.
Out his podcast. Yeah. As you can tell, it's going to be fucking solid. So definitely go over there, you know, hit that favorite button, star him up. And I'm positive he's going to be coming out with some great content. I really appreciate you coming on the show, man. And hopefully down the road, we can even do like our own, you know, project together, because I'm definitely getting a good vibe here. And I've been looking for someone in the area that is ambitious and wants to get into the podcast game in the cannabis industry with me, but I haven't found them. Like, a lot of people are just kind of like, eh, you know, not about it. But you seem like you're really into it, so.
Yeah, I'm into it. I got to be honest with you. I don't have the equipment. It's me in a one-bedroom apartment with a microphone, and right now I'm talking on my iPhone, so.
Well, that's a good thing about technology.
There's no, as we mentioned earlier, there's no Joe Rogan-ness going on here. I'm not even at that level. My podcasting right now, I would say, is, let's call it like karaoke is to professional singers. I'm just kind of showing up and talking and speaking, and people don't even want to hear what it is I gotta say. So,
well, hey, man,
but we'll get there, man. Hey, if you want to do a collaboration, you got my cell phone number, right? So we can talk on the side about this some more, without a doubt.
100%,
like I
man.
Said, I'd love to have you on my show.
We'll be talking about it. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Shout out to Mike. Do you go by Mike or Michael?
Michael. We can go with Michael.
Okay. Shout out to Michael from One Bird, Two Stone Powwow. Really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for everybody who's been listening. And as always, keep hustling and stay positive.